seems to have a dream to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. This is Mark Dick. I'm your host, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and the baker's life, sort of the things that we do in order to bring the good stuff to our communities and to our customers. And today we have a really fun episode because I get to talk with Don Guerra. And Don is the owner of Berrio Bread in Tucson, Arizona. He's a really great guy, very upbeat, very optimistic, very exciting fellow. And he's also done an awful lot of work and an awful lot of thinking around this idea of the community-supported bakery. The first time I saw Don, ever heard of Don, was a YouTube video that I saw about how he was baking in a deck oven, in a proper deck oven in his garage, and then taking the bread all over the city and dropping it off with his customers, like at schools and church parking lots and that kind of thing, which I thought was really cool because at the time I was at the time he was moving from that to a bigger place, I was moving from a retail space back to my garage. And so I thought, hey, this is really cool. Maybe I should try and fit a deck oven in here instead of my wood-fired one. But I'm still with the brick oven. But that's okay. And then the more I started sort of following Don and watching what he did, and then I got to meet him for a couple of minutes at Wheatstock back in February and stuff, I noticed, I said, man, this guy is like all over the place. You know, he's traveling overseas and he's teaching these classes and he's outstanding in this farmer's field looking at, you know, a very specific to Arizona variety of wheat, and he's taking on interns and he's just doing all kinds of stuff. And it's like, how does he do all of this? And so that's why I reached out and wanted to talk to him to try and understand, well, who is this guy and what's the whole picture here? So we had a really good chat, and rather than me describe the talk to you, I thought it might be an interesting idea to just actually let you listen to it. Hey, how about that? So here we go. It's right off the hop. It's the talk with Don Guerra of Berrio Bread in Tucson, Arizona. Right on, man. Yeah. Hey, so thanks. So I guess I wanted to ask about Poland, because you were in Poland quite recently. What got you out there?
Well, Poland was an amazing trip, first of all. And I was asked by our city of gastronomy to attend the event and talk about bread. I mean, this year's event.
Okay.
It's so timely that it was called the Days of Bread. There's a big festival that happens in Poland called the Days of Bread, but they wanted to welcome, you know, other countries, other cities that were involved in the Creative Cities Network to come together and celebrate bread and community and just have this dialogue about local grain economy and really the celebration of bread. So cool. It was incredible for me to be the representative.
Yeah,
I came from Tucson and then the U.S. to hang out with all these amazing people in Krakow, which is like a stunning city, right?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I've got a couple of customers that are originally from there.
Yeah, really?
They tell me it's just absolutely gorgeous. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The city itself is pristine. I mean, it's these architecture was preserved during the in the war. Mm-hmm. So you go and it's just incredible. Everywhere you turn, you want to take pictures.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And so what's the Creative Cities Network?
So it's UNESCO.
Oh, okay.
United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organizations. Yeah, so it's all the cities are involved in UNESCO. And so, you know, every couple years or so, there's this, really it happens yearly, but it meet in different parts of the world. But it's just through the organization, UNESCO organization, they bring all these people together, all these delegates together, represent their cities and countries to come together and to create knowledge networks, basically.
Okay.
So knowledge networks that can just spread information from country to country, and you know, wherever it is, if it's a city, if it's you know, literature designation or heritage space, or if it's gastronomy. But this year was, you know, not just people that were involved in city gastronomy, but all others were invited too. So it's really just a great celebration.
Very cool. And Tucson is one of the cities then? Is that kind of?
Yeah, Tucson is one of the cities of gastronomy. So we're.
Oh, that's really cool.
Neat. Yeah.
I haven't. I wasn't aware of that before. I'm going to have to check that out more. That sounds really
neat.
Because I just picked it up for you based on Instagram, really. It
was,
I saw all of a sudden Don's out in, Poland. It's like, what's going on?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. It's just amazing. Yeah. And then, you know, we're going to hopefully have some bakers from Poland come.
Sure.
And then I'll have some bakers, you know, that I met there come out and visit. So
great.
One from Italy. So it's just great for me just to be out there and just continuing to build a community that's international, you know, not just focusing, when I say community, not just local and national, but international community rally behind bread and grains and local food promotion. It's just awesome.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's in my own strange way, that's sort of what the podcast is for as well. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. You know, just spreading the word, talking about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the first I ever heard of you or saw you was I think it was like a YouTube video where you were baking out of your garage and then taking the bread, you know, out to a schoolyard and out to a couple other places to drop it off from your community supported bakery.
Yeah.
Is that where you got your start, or does it start further back?
Yeah, it starts further back, but yeah. So it starts for me in 1990 with my kind of bread journey. I got a professional baking job, which I was thrilled about, you know, more of a tryout than got the job. I had to go to this bakery at night and it was three guys making bread, for, you know, three guys on the crew making bread. And, you know, it was just that first night where I just fell in love. I was like, wow, this whole bread thing is awesome. You know, they barely let me touch the job and they kind of yelled at me a bunch because I was screwing stuff up. Yep. You know, even packaging the bread, you had to do it a certain way. But I just thought, wow, this is for me. You know, I had grew up in kitchens, always cooking with my family, always a celebration of food and feeding people. And you know, I had plenty of jobs as a dishwasher, busboy, and then, you know, as a cook and then kitchen manager. By the time I was 16, I was actually managing a kitchen. And so, but when I found bread, it was like, wow, this is the part of the kitchen I want to be in. This is really what I love doing, because it had like all the things that I see in myself, or I love about, you know, or how I want to live my life. You know, it's like paying attention to something. It grows, so you have to be there to kind of nurture it along. You know, it's pretty physical work, so I love to be, you know, working my hands and doing things and being tired at the end of the day. And then, you know, it's fun. At the end of the day, you have something that you're proud of. And I was, all those things, I just thought, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. You know, and I told my parents, and they were a little nervous, like, what, baking bread? Like, really? And I was like, no, you don't understand. I'm doing this, folks.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of took off from there.
Yeah, right on. And where was that, the first gig? Was that in Tucson as well?
Like, I was in Flagstaff.
In Flagstaff. So you're an Arizona boy?
Yep, Arizona born and raised.
Right on. Cool. So so then what, I guess, take me through, how did you get set up in your garage then to do that? I'm really curious about, I guess, the community supported bakery model, because
Oh man, there's a lot to it, and it's just crazy how it all came down. But yeah, so basically, you know, I had those big bakeries. I had one in Flagstaff. It just took off so well. It was 1995. I was 25 years old, launched that bakery. And I was like, I had some travels in Europe. So, you know, I came back and I was like, this is the kind of model I want, just to sell bread, a boulangerie. I'm going to do this. So I brought that to Flagstaff in 95. It was successful. Did it in 97, opened another branch in Ashland, Oregon. At the time, I was super into, you know, ride mountain bikes and ride my snowboard. So I just looked for a new place to do it. I found Ashland, opened the bakery there. It went well until I just felt like I could barely manage it because it got really big, right? The two bakeries spread out, and I had taken two partners at that time, and it wasn't really the deal that I had planned, you know? So it got a little intense, and I had to make some decisions there, what I wanted to do. I had the investors say, hey, you know, we would like to just buy the whole company, not just one of the partnerships that we have with you in the bakery, but we want to do this. And I said, yes, you know, I said, okay, time and money, I'm going to back out of it. I'm going to go back to Tucson where I feel really comfortable after being in Ashland. And I wanted to start a bakery here. It just didn't work out. But I thought the next best thing would be to go back to school, go back to U of A, get my teaching credentials. And that's what I did. So I ended up graduating from the College of Ed and got my teaching credentials, taught for 7 years public school. I was a PE teacher. And a little bit of math and a little bit of health. And I used to bake bread every Thursday. And, you know, just to continue, just to keep that fire alive. Because it was, like, tough on me to get, you know, to go from, like, a village baker to a teacher. It was different life. But I thought, keep the bread going. That's what I have to do. And that's what I love. So I was selling bread once a week. And then my last year of teaching, 2008, there was a shortcut, you know, there were some budget cuts in our district, and I was told my job might be, you know, one of the cuts. So I thought, hey, this is like life right here. It's telling me something, you know. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to scramble for my job, and I'm just going to go back to what I love doing, what I've been waiting for, and that's get the bakery going. And so I had applied for some SBA loans, you know, to do the bakery again, and shot down. Their SBA was not lending. It was part of the whole, you know, economic downturn. Right. America. And I thought, okay, so what can I do? I want to make bread. I have to do it differently. I have to raise my own money. And it was around just, you know, a little bit later, but I started early with this concept of a garage bakery.
Yeah.
And everyone at the time said, you can't do that. This is crazy. Why would you want to do that? And I said, I don't have a lot of money. You know, I have a little bit of savings from my last bakeries. I want to do it myself. I want to do it on my terms. And I want to have an educational component. I need to teach people about why my bread is different, because this style of bread had not been in my community. So I had to teach them. I wanted to teach about natural oven bread. I wanted to be a bread educator. I want to teach other people about how to do it. And so that's what I did. I started the garage bakery. I had a pull-in deck oven. You know, spent about $30,000 and just bombed out my bakery with the help of my father-in-law, who's an engineer. I had this design. I even gave it to him, and he thought, oh, this is not going to work, but I'll take a look at your plan. But it worked, okay? So I had $30,000 invested, and I had a full-on bakery, renovated garage that had heating and cooling, plumbing, and the coolest deck oven on the block, right? Coolest deck oven in the garage in the city. So I was like, the CSB is born, the community-supported baker. And so what I did is I thought, okay, I'm an educator. I've done that. I'm an anthropologist. I studied anthropology at the U. You know, I love making this bread. I'm going to put those together in one package. So I thought, there's three components to my CSB. The bread production, that's a must, right? That's the economic engine. Yep. The education outreach, you know, which is, you know, a lot of just being out in the community, doing demos, sharing what I do and not holding any secrets. Mm-hmm. And then it was the promotion of local grains. So back then I thought, okay, well, I have to recreate myself. I'm not just going to think about these flours I order from hundreds of miles away and rip open the bag and look at the powder and make bread. But I want to know where I get my seeds from, where I get my grain and flour. And so life just hit me once again. And I had this organization in town here called Native Seed Search. They're seed savers, and they work all over the world, but specifically in this region to recruit seeds that grow well in this region. Heat resistant, drought resistant seeds. They work a lot with native peoples, and then help the community with farming practices and gardening practices. They had a grant called SARE, Sustainable Agricultural Research Education. They said, hey, Don, we have this grant. We want to apply for it. It's about this grain, revitalizing or reinvigorating local grain economy by introducing this grain that was here hundreds of years ago, brought by Father Kino in the late 1690s. They explained a little bit, and I thought, let's do this. This is so exciting. What I've been waiting for. Are you kidding me? And so they said, we want you on our team. We want you to be a test baker, but we want you to help promote it. And so it was grown out 4 acres test plot. And I had this like really rough mill after that first season of like this grain. One of the head researchers and, you know, ethnobotanist here in town, Gary Navhan, brought it to me and said, make some bread. Let's see what you can do with it. And I made some bread overnight. You know, it wasn't the prettiest bread, but I made some bread. I took it to them the next day and all of our jaws just dropped. And we looked at each other and said, do you know what this means? And it was just like, wow, we have this chance to kind of like recreate, you know, what was going on in the past. So it started there. It was 4 acres of wheat. Now it's up to 120 acres of grain grown in the desert. A lot of it, BKW Farms. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, five local varietals, organic, sustainable farming practice here in Southern Arizona. And so I'm kind of found myself, you know, fast forward 7 years ahead, just kind of on the forefront of making bread with this grain and promoting it. All the things I started out to do, I'm still doing, you know, I feel like I haven't really changed who I am.
Right.
When people ask me, you know, what's the next thing?
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's more the same. You know, I have a great formula for what I love to do. And that combines all the things in my life that I'm passionate about doing, sharing with the community, making the bread, researching the grains and getting that out there, and then teaching people how and why. And, you know, again, no secrets. If they want to bake the bread, that's what I want, because that's the only thing that's going to grow the local grain economy is really this resurgence of community-supported bakers, home bakers, you know, and then professional bakers who can, you know, take a lot of the grain. But I think what we have to do is focus on the small-scale bakeries. Like, they have a chance to use the grains, get them involved. It's not just waiting for people to open a $250,000 bakery to start sourcing some of the, you know, heritage wheats. Let's do it on the ground level, the grassroots approach.
Well, for sure, because you've got the more people involved, the less dependent you are on any one person in the process, right?
Exactly. You got it.
So when you're ready to retire, the whole thing doesn't fall apart. Or
you know, that's right.
Exactly.
That's sustainability to me. You know, that sustainability is, and I want that to be a legacy. Is it's built so strong and it's built in a sustainable organic matter that, hey, you know, no matter if one person backs off on my team or even if I back off, this is in place and this is going, and natural leavened bread, high quality breads, growing grains and teaching about it stays in my community way past me. So
that's
what I want.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the community response to what you've been doing and how they've kind of either bought in or resisted what you're trying to do.
Yeah. You know, first thing I want to say is I'm incredibly lucky to be in Tucson and to be part of this community, because I've worked, you know, as an educator, I've worked, you know, as a bread maker, a lot of community support enterprise type projects, and really believe in the community investment piece. And so when I started doing it, people right away, they're like, we believe in you. We love your project, you know. And at first, you do have these outliers that are like, that's kind of crazy. You're making bread out of your garage, and then you're driving around in your van to try to sell it, and you're teaching people, like, if it's so good, why are you telling people? And so it was like, you know what? All those people thought I was nuts, but those are the people now, fast forward 5 years, 7 years, that are saying, man, you nailed it. You got it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say most people are, we believe in you. We love this idea. In our community, our Tucson community, we are so blessed to have this feeling and this vibe of, you know, all for one, one for all. Everyone wants to see the local people do well.
Oh.
And so, yeah, we are very, very blessed with that. And having people, like, if you start a good concept and you're solid and true and have integrity in what you do,
right,
people will support you no matter what, you know. And I think I have a lot of people, I see them all the time. This one woman came in the other day and I said, wow, you're back again. That's great. You know, you must be sharing the bread. You love the bread. And she said, I come in here just because I love coming in here.
Yeah.
I want to support you. So I buy the bread and I give it out.
Right.
But I see a lot of these people and it's taken some time, but now that I've got some traction and, you know, I'm holding a lot of seminars and inviting people from the outside to come in and talk about it and show them that it's not just a local movement,
right,
not just a national movement, but it's an international global movement that we are after, right? These bakers, the community supported bakers, and seed savers, and the seed scientists, and farmers. I think it's what our country and what our world needs right now. So I think we're seeing this just huge movement around grain and bread. And, you know, it used to be like, we think tomatoes was popular, heirloom tomatoes or heirloom vegetables that were popular, but we haven't given much thought about grain, but look how much grain is part of our diet and you can make it from very delicious and digestible to the other side, which is people are not processing correctly. So let's teach these other people, just teach our community how to process the grain to make it digestible, nutritious, flavorful, you know, enjoy the texture of it. So all these things add up to where, you know, where we need to be.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, that's really neat. I don't have much knowledge of Arizona other than, you know, half my city flies down to Phoenix in the wintertime, right?
Yeah.
So it's, I really appreciate you giving a bit of the background about the community vibe in Tucson and sort of how that's helped you out. Cause it's, that's not something I've ever had a chance to hear about in your area of the world for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, our city gastronomy's just shed huge, you know, just a bright light on what we're doing here. But, you know, this region has had the longest agriculturally farmed area in North America. So dating back 4,000 years ago, showing evidence of that.
Yeah.
So that's part of the designation too. But, you know, the UNESCO City Gastronomy designation is not just about like the enchiladas, the chimichangas, the food, the culinary food here, but it's really about the agricultural history, the potential for farming, the innovative practice around business and food.
Yep.
And, you know, it's all of that. So, you know, when people talk about, the food is okay, the tacos, this or that. Hey, it's not about the tacos, guys. Oh my God, about all the stuff we do as a community to promote what we do.
Yeah.
So it's, but I'd say the city of gastronomy's probably has been one of the strongest forces to just get Tucson on the map out in the end of the world and show people that we're grown food. You know, people think it's a desert, you know, they maybe see Phoenix but even around Phoenix, there's a lot of farming that happens. And if people were to take the time to do, you know, agricultural or culinary tour here, wow, they would be impressed because once you find it, it all makes sense.
Yeah. You know, and that's so awesome. Like it's something that I've learned so much about, I'd say maybe only over like the last year and a half is this idea of the agricultural history in areas that I never thought of as having it, you know, and the desert in Arizona would be one. I've been talking to some of the guys in Vermont and learning about the history there. You know, I'm from Saskatchewan and I grew up in the 1970s, right? And so it was very much single color, right? So Saskatchewan
is
where you grow wheat. And Central California is where you grow vegetables. And so, you know, that kind of thing. And it was like everything had its place. And you realize that, no, like all things were grown all over the place and not that long ago, but they were different, you know, and they were different and unique. And every area had their own set of tastes in that. And I just find the whole rebirth of that to be completely fascinating. Like it's
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I think what now we're seeing too is like communities understand that they need to take care of themselves, you know, and people rallying behind that because, you know, even our country, like you see the USDA grants starting to, you know, slim down and we're been really relying on federal funds for different projects. But, you know, with all that changing, we can make a decision, you know, whether to just take care of what we can and make the most of it inside our own.
Right.
You know, communities are complaining about it. And so I think what we're doing is everyone's just saying, hey, you know, let's make the most of it. Let's do what we do and try to create our own knowledge networks around the people that can uplift our community, whether it be like, you know, the bakers or the, you know, doctors or, you know, whatever it is, whatever your profession. But people are now seeing the benefit of sharing their expertise and offering that as, you know, a community investment offering rather than saying, what do I get from this? They're saying, you know what? I'm going to offer it, because in the end, when you do that, you realize like it's going to be an avalanche, right? You're going to receive way more than you've given. And that's just being an open person and realizing that you're doing something to better someone else's life or a community rather than just your own. You know, what do I get from this?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's what I've experienced.
Yeah. And now is that the sort of one of the themes when you're out in the community talking about these local grains is both sort of the history and the importance that it's different than sort of, you know, what you'd get at the Safeway?
Yeah, that's a big part of it, you know, because I think people are just getting tired of feeling poor after eating, you know, flash leaven bread, leaven with Saccharomyces and the species of yeast, you know. I think people are wanting to eat bread. That's kind of this, you know, we all want to eat grains and bread. And if you can make it nutritious and then put a smile on someone's face, and that's a result of like having your GI be in good health, right? When your GI is in good health, your digestive system is working well, signal to your brain, like, this is good, you know, and then right back down to your mouth and it's like, smile. And I think that's what people want to feel, but they also want to know that their food is prepared with integrity.
Right.
And they want to know the producer. And I think that's something that we're starting to see is these small artisanal food producers pop up, and people really wanting to say, hey, that person, that woman right there, that guy, you know, that group of people are making my food, and I can see them, I can touch them, I can talk to them, and they're real people, you know? They're not someone that's shows up on a name on a grocery market shelf, and you have no idea where that production facility is, or you don't know who that person is. I think that's what people are craving too, is just being in touch with their food.
Yeah. Oh, I can echo that for sure. Like, there's nothing like you're walking down the street and you run into somebody and they introduce you as, you know, he's the guy that makes my bread. And I know that when I had my retail bakery, my bakers were getting the same thing. You know, they'd be up and say, well, I work at Orange Boot Bakery, and they're like, holy Dinah, like, I love eating what you're making. Right. And there's that personal thing, which is, I don't know. I find it to be really special. It makes you feel like a linchpin in the community, you know, for sure.
Oh, you know it. And I think, you know, my staff is realizing that now too, is when they go out and talk about it, people just, they say, what do you do? Well, you know, my staff say, I have 9 amazing staff members right now.
Right. Yeah.
They say, hey, I work at Barrio Bread. And then people are taken back and, wow, well, let me tell you this. They start to share the stories.
Yeah.
And these, my staff, I'll tell you, these are the people that I've hired, and they're not going anywhere. They don't, at the end of the day, they're hesitant about, you know, going home. They punch out and they're like, is there anything else I can do? And it's, you know, it's like, if you can do that. And a chef told me that one time when I told him the story about how my staff likes to stay on. And he says, are you kidding me, Don? He's like, this is like a chef's dream. When you can lead that way and you create an environment where you create such an exciting environment, like something might happen at any second. No one should miss this.
Right.
He's like, then you got like a winning team.
Yeah.
He says, that's like the ultimate for anybody. So, you know, he's like, just take that and realize like that's coming from you. That's coming from the environment you create and the product you have. And then the community just loving it. So
It's
special to me. And I love to see my staff getting recognized like that.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like just from sort of snooping and pictures that I've seen and stuff that it's sort of an open concept at your place a little bit now too, right? Like people can see what's going on.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's the other part of the business that I've designed and is a more of an exhibition, open floor plan. So people love to see, you know, not only like they know the producer, but to see it happening in front of their eyes. So I have this tiny little shop, 1,000 square feet. My reception area is about 350.
Yeah.
And I have this beautiful 8-meter deck oven right up front, you know, and it's like people come in and they know how to stand now. They get next to the loader, but not too close. They're watching. And it's like, comes out of the oven and they point to it. I want that one. You know, I'm like, hey, it's all you. Get a bag. I'm putting bread in right off the loader into their stacks, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that's
the way to create the excitement, you know, and make it visible. And that's part of, you know, this trend in business too, which is transparency in business. You want to you want to be very upfront about what you do and why you do. And I think that's what we're craving as a country and as a world too, is, you know, we want to know, we want to be told that the person, you know, making it is honest, and so is their process and their facility, and not to hide anything. And that makes us all feel better. Like, okay, we are part of this, you know? And that's why I tell my community is, you're a part of this, you know, just you buying this bread and you stand here and you, your eyes wide open tells me that you've bought into this and you are part of my success and the part of the whole brand success is you believe in it. And that's part of me showing them and not being, you know, hesitant of telling them exactly how I do. And I teach classes, you know, right now, like I've been trying to keep track, but like 670 people how to make bread in this community.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
And that's inspiring to me, that they know. So they can come in and they are talking about their bread. They're still in the bakery, right? Because we all know, if we're been in the business, that being a solid baker is about practice, right? Practice and being well-intentioned. So they come in and they ask me, hey, my bread's doing this and this. What do you think? And I'm there just like pulling loaves out of the oven, telling them, try this, try that. Okay, what's this temperature? And they, you know, they got this whole experience they would never get from just going in the bakery, where you have this wall of bread, you order it, and the counter staff gives it to you, and you walk out.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Like, I think that there, and it might have been in Jeffrey's book, or I'm not sure, but one of the books that I read, you know, they talk about, hey, you know, if you're trying to start your own sourdough culture, just go to a bakery that you love and ask for some of theirs, right?
And I read that too. Yeah.
I'm gonna, I'll say it was Jeffrey, but I'm not sure. But I know that my some of my customers read that, because very, very meekly and very shyly, they would come in and say, like, is there any way I could get some of this? And it was always like, yeah, absolutely. You know, as long as you tell me how it's going, you know, and then you get like a tentative question the next week or whatever. And, but then you it's that encouragement and you get people excited about the process themselves. You know, it's a lot of fun. Like I always found it a lot of fun for that, because I never lost a customer when they started baking at home. Like they were still coming in and getting bread, and then they were baking their own as well. So it always seemed to work fine for me. It was like, now there's just more in the city, more people baking. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, it comes down to like a bread appreciation, you know. Yeah. People, they might do it, you let them do it, because we all know it's not easy.
No.
Every day is different. So
no,
if
for
we
sure.
give them some of the basics, it's a fun experiment for anybody.
So. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you a bit more about sort of this idea of social entrepreneurship. And I know that's the phrase that you use. And it's something that I'm trying to understand a little bit better, is sort of the different possibilities. And so I'm curious, like, so what does that mean to you, and sort of how does it manifest itself in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a perfect match for what I'm doing with the bread. And it kind of stems from my education, you know, being a graduate of the U of A and then being a teacher, and how I love to just give as much as I can, you know, that way when it comes time to teaching others. And then that feeling I get where I teach others and I see how they appreciate it and move on and better themselves. So a big part of it, the social entrepreneurship piece for me at the bakery, is talking about the local grains and getting on the community and teaching about it, even though I might not be paid for it, you know. And what I've done now, I had to do that a lot at the beginning in order to sell my bread, because people would say, why is the bread burned? Why does it look so dark? You know, they don't understand like why this bread looks the way it does, why I would choose to use local grains, even though they're more expensive.
Yep.
Why I want to have an alternative business model. So I thought all these things work well for me. So getting out in the community and teaching about what I do, and sometimes offering that for free, you know? And so that really helped me. What I do now is I kind of have these different organizations I work with, and some are free, some I do get paid for, some better than others, but it's important to me to start with the kids and get them excited about the bread and the grains and baking. And so, you know, I love to do that. And I can see that my time off task with the bread mm-hmm. and giving it to the community, sometimes and a lot of times for free, yep. is really why my business is doing so well. So I think you, like we've been talking about, you have to sometimes give up something or give to get.
Oh, for sure.
Once you give, people realize that, hey, you're dedicated and you have much more to ask from the community than just money, you know,
yep.
or just an exchange of bread for the cash. So you're giving this service to them. And so see, people always say, you know, and they love to say, it's thanks for your service to the community. You know, you're, mm-hmm. you're like a food champion of our city and you give so much and it's incredible how you do that. I don't know, but because I always get to show up at these different things and teach or talk. But I feel like that piece for me stems from, you know, also my parents about giving back and doing what's right. And so I feel like between my education, my upbringing, and now with the bread, how it's just like a genuine profession, right? It's like
sure.
no one cheats their baker because, geez, it's all about sustenance. It's about basic values, core values with the bread, even when you're working with the bread as a baker. A set of core values you need to have to be successful at bread making. So I think all that just has got inside of me and just comes out as my social entrepreneurship piece of sharing it, talking about it, and helping others do. And, you know, doing what's right rather than doing what's going to make me rich in the end. And
yeah.
the money follows, you know.
Right.
I'm a pretty simple guy, so I have all my needs met and, you know, a lot of my wants. I live comfortably in the city. I can go to a pub, and it's great when someone just pushes up a beer and says, this one's on me, you know, thanks for whatever you did last week. And
yeah.
it's like, that's when I'm truly alive and giving and feeling like, you know, that giving spirit's totally paying off is when I see how people value it,
sure.
you know?
Sure. Well, and you know, and the chance to go to Poland and,
yeah.
and just be part of that thing is like, holy crow. You know, like
oof, I'm amazing. You
know, I'm this baker in Tucson, and these folks are interested in what I'm doing. How does that go, right? And that's
yeah.
And it's like, and I totally can see how that. It's sort of like it. Or my philosophy is if you think of that as promotion, you're never going to get those opportunities. But if you think of it as knowledge sharing, and if you really truly feel like that as sharing the excitement and sharing the knowledge that you've got and sharing the experience you have, then all of a sudden these doors open up. And it's so
it cool. does. Yeah. And the same thing happened in Asia. You know, I met a group of people there in Asia and Taiwan, and the same thing, you know, we formed this campaign called Bread Without Borders. And man, it was just magical how it starts off with someone liking my Facebook pictures and went on for about 6 months. And I'm thinking, I'm seeing a lot of these Chinese names, you know, who are these people? And
yes.
and realizing that, hey, we're global now, a keystroke, you're on the other side of the world. And how could someone in Asia can appreciate what I do? And after a while, they reached, you know, I inquired, I said, you know, I just want to learn more about you. You know, can you tell me? And they said it was, you know, even a senator in Taiwan watching my feed and saying, we love it. We want you to come to Taiwan. And, you know, and I just blown away.
Yeah.
How they thought this model could fit in Taiwan. And so now a CSB model is in Taiwan and flourishing. It's just amazing. Now made it to mainland China. CSB model where you create basically the model of creating a food hub. So you have a bakery as the center, acting as the center of the food hub.
Yep.
And growing out grains around it. And then the processing by the bakery, the community supporting the bakery to make that turn. So basically, yeah, a circular economy model, right? So the bakery or the community supplies the market to the bakery supplies the market to the farmers. Has to be well coordinated, but if that whole thing works, it's magic. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So you have a sustainable like system inside your community, food promotion that works. And so that's kind of what I've been teaching, and it's just incredible how I can present that and see people just take it on. And this group in mainland China recently, north of Shanghai, have done it, you know, 500 acres of heritage wheats, blueberries, and teas
wow.
with that educational bakery center production facility, just pumping it out. And
wow.
it's funded, you know, somewhat provincially, but, you know, some other people that stepped up and said, this is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's really cool how it's all worked out. I never thought I'd be in this position.
Yeah.
But I think it just comes down to like what we're talking about is doing what you think is right and not just what you think is right for yourself, but realizing that we all have impact beyond, you know, our small scope sometimes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's, it's really cool. The Asia, and especially like Southeast Asia, is not an area that I've thought much about. And yet I've seen like what the story you described. And I know Michelle just opened up a place in Korea, and I think Tartine did as well, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, there's that too, right? Because I always think first it's, you know, North America, then Europe, then you get into Australia and that kind of a thing. But it truly is global, you know.
It is global. And we all want to eat like each other, you know. And
yeah, yeah.
I got back from Taiwan, people said, oh, they eat bread in Taiwan? It's like, we eat ramen, right? We love ramen. We're crazy about all these Asian foods, yeah, right? Yeah. They're like, I guess you're right. That makes sense. But we all can now interface with each other,
yeah.
You know, and with travel the way it is, boy, you know, you can get anywhere you want in the world in 24 hours. So yeah. Get on that plane and do it and connect with people. And you realize that you're more similar than different.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Hey, so one really somewhat goofy question, but I am very curious about this is, and maybe for the listeners to the show that are maybe smaller, just starting out, how in the heck do you get 27,000 Instagram followers? I'm so impressed by what you do. I've been following you for ages, but I got to ask the question, because that is like for a baker or a bakery, that's insane. Like, that's great.
Yeah. Oh my God. And I'll first start out by saying I did not pay for any of those followers.
No, I'm sure you didn't.
Yeah. You know what? I started out, and this is what I did.
Yeah.
So I started with Facebook, right? And yep. I thought, what I have to do, and I got, this is my game plan. I'm going to connect with a lot of people in the industry that I admire. The right. First person I connected with, and maybe or maybe not, he'll listen, or maybe someone will tell him, but Mike Zukowski in Petaluma.
Oh, yeah.
He's always been my idol because he and I probably started about the same age of baking. And maybe I have a few years on him as far as how long I've been in the game, but that guy is just really special. And then it was just like from there, all these other people I, you know, was really had a lot of respect for in the industry, but he was probably the first one. And the rest that follow, there's too many to mention.
Oh, sure.
They all know who they are. They're great bakers. But so I started just to like their photos.
Mm-hmm.
And then they probably saw like, who's this guy liking my photos? They got back to me and my Facebook kind of, you know, happy to say it went out of control. So now I'm maxed on Facebook with my personal page.
Right.
But then I thought Instagram a couple years later, and I had a game plan for that was show my art. And I'll tell this to everyone out there who's an artisan or who has a craft, get your stuff out there. You know, a lot of people are, you know, they're maybe say it's vain to like always be on Instagram to promote, but you have to. This is your job. You are an artisan. Show who you are and what you do. So get your art out there. Take pictures of everything. That'll be helpful down the road when you build websites or whatever. The other thing I thought about doing is I have to be authentic. I have to be a real person. I want people to be part of my tribe. And I say my bread tribe, part of my personal too. So I had this strategy of like, okay, I'll do like 5 bread posts. And then I'll do 2 about community, and then I'll do 1 about personal life. So people get an idea that I'm not just doing things for, you know, the bread. Oh, 1 second. Good to see you, buddy. One of my customers.
No, it's all good.
So one of my customers just came and gave me a hug. So I got to take
it, man.
The last one was show some family and show that I have kids, you know, and that I have this life and I'm not just a bread producer and I'm not spending all my time just grinding on the bread that, well, I kind of did that. Okay.
Yeah.
But I have some other life that I could sit down and be out like doing on a hike or having a beer with a friend or kind of silly, goofy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then this strategy started to work like, oh, here's this guy. We just want to follow him and his life and his journey. So, and it was about that time where I got a lot of opportunities to travel. So I'd be going to different places and taking pictures with different bakers or taking pictures with chefs and, you know, where it was. So that's kind of was my strategy. And so I don't even know how it happened, but just over time, I kept getting all these followers. And then I just think it's because you have some authenticity
Sure.
About what you do. And I think once you realize you're not a showboat, you're not just trying to gain followers, but you're trying to share a message that you have something to offer that people can benefit from, then I thought, this is working for me, and I love this community, this IG community.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of take it serious. Like, a lot of people I'll know, and personally, and just through dialogue, or they'll connect with me. Even a lot of people, Australia now, reaching out and connecting, for sure. Now I'm Poland. I left Poland. And when I went to Poland, they're like, dude, we have this whole group of people that want to meet you. They're all your followers, you know? And I'm like, I've never been to Poland. I don't really know any people in Poland, but that's cool. But, you know, when I get there, all these people are there saying, you know, we've been following you for years and we're so happy for you. And we saw that post about your son playing basketball. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Mind blowing. But I think that's the strategy. And I think you can do that over social media now.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And, you know, well, and I can attest from being one of the followers is that your bread is beautiful.
Thanks.
But your story is more than the bread, and it is equally as beautiful. So, like, you know, if you're following Dawn or if you're following Barry O'Bread, you're gonna see pictures of beautiful bread, but you're gonna get inspired in a ton of different ways from what's happening with the harvest, or what's happening in the community, or what's happening in your travels. And I just think that's, it certainly attracted me to you. I remember when I saw you at Wheatstock there, I was like, I got to meet this guy, because he certainly seems fascinating from afar. And I can report you're equally fascinating in person. So there you go.
Hey, thanks a lot. Yeah. Dude, I just figure that's beautiful. Oh. I ultimately just want to help people. And if they get some ideas about the garage bakery or selling the bread at schools, whatever it is, it's like, if that's rubbing off a little bit, it's like, man, that's beautiful for me too. It's cool that everyone thinks I'm this person, but just, I'm just a real guy. And I just love making bread like everyone else, but just inspiring when to see like the amount of people I could help or inspire, or just like they get ideas from me, and that's cool. You know, that's like life right there. That's all I want to do with my life.
Yeah. And when Mike Sikowski posts something, you'll look at it and go, how the heck did he do that?
He's a master.
Oh, he's something. Yeah, for sure. But
yeah.
I'm going to let you go. I know you're a busy guy and stuff, but man, thanks so much for this. You have been a big inspiration for me, because like I said, I found out about you when I had a retail bakery, and since I've gone back to the garage, and I always was sort of like, hey, you know, the model that you showed in that very first video that I saw of, you know, you in the garage and out in the community, it's one that I've been following. And so thank you for that,
man. Thank you. That feels special. Thank you.
Well, and just to say that, you know, yet another example, folks, of how bread bakers, there's something special about them, man, because like, they're the nicest people, and you're right up there. You're a very generous guy, and I really appreciate you taking the time to chat today and share your story.
Oh, love it. Thank you for the opportunity. I feel really fortunate to be able to talk with you.
Okay, buddy. Thanks a bunch. Okay. And I'm glad we were able to do this.
I'm so happy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care, Don. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you.
And that was Don. It was a little funky with the audio quality, just because he was outdoors on his phone, but I think it sounds okay. I hope it sounds okay to you. It was a really good talk. Very interesting guy, and I'd love to stay in touch with Don for sure, and certainly see where he goes next and what he does next, because he seems to always have something cooking. so good for him. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you like the show and you want to help me out, I sure would appreciate any time that you recommend this to a friend, whether it's through a rating or just word of mouth, or grabbing their phone and downloading the episodes on there so they have to listen to it, or locking them in the car while an episode's playing and making them listen to it that way. That would be great, because I think that the more people that listen to this, the more feedback I get, and the more feedback I get, the more ideas I have of people that I should be talking to next. So and then it's just this virtuous cycle, and it's a lot of fun for everybody. So Thanks for listening. If you want to get a hold of me, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to me on Instagram. I'm Mad Baker on Instagram. Or email me, Mark with a K, at riseuppod.com. Or just head over to the website, riseuppod.com, and leave a comment on your favorite episode. And then I'll read it and it'll make me smile. So thanks a bunch. Have a great week. We'll be back with another episode next week. And happy baking.